Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this.
Last summer, BYU came under scrutiny for how it handles rape allegations. On the one hand, you had some young women who reported that after they reported their rapes, BYU opened an honor code investigation against them. This can lead to women fearing for retaliation and not reporting rapes for fear of getting in trouble themselves. On the other hand, Dr. Darren Smith of the University of Memphis reports some situations of false rape allegations. How does BYU handle these two complex and sensitive issues? Let's listen in on our conversation.
Since you mentioned sex, I want to bring up two other issues, and I don't know how familiar you are. This past summer, I believe it was, there was a big issue with rape at BYU. And so there's a lot of issues about the honor code, talking to the police, and basically girls who were reporting rape being then subject to an honor code investigation and basically smeared in the mud. And they said, look, we've got to separate those two. So can you talk about how do you think BYU could handle that better?
Allegations to rape is always confidential. It's a confidential issue. So first of all, why are we even knowing about it? You know, why do we even have to even know about any of that? That's none of our business. I mean, in terms of the public's business, that's between the young woman, whoever the perpetrator is, in the institution.
Well, I think BYU would be more than happy to keep that away from the media. Yeah, it's been the women who've brought this up to our attention and said, look, I was subject to an honor code violation and I didn't do anything wrong.
Well, from that standpoint, and that's an outrage. I mean, if the honor code is punishing the young women for something that they had no control over, had nothing to do with, that's horrible. You know, and it speaks to what we've said about the athletes. You know, you're having people make subjective decisions, right, about other people based upon their own lens, their own way of seeing the world, that which may not congeal with a young woman who's complained or who has alleged rape.
So let me just point out, I remember reading an incident where a woman went to her bishop and it claimed that she was raped. Now, I don't know that law enforcement got involved, but her bishop's response was, well, I hope you don't get pregnant because I'll have to pull your ecclesiastical endorsement. And she's like, I was raped. Could the church do a better job of training bishops to avoid this kind of
mishap?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably so. I would have thought they would have done that by now. That would have been a part of, what a bishop goes through to train to be a bishop. You know, in the manuals and the handbooks that talk about the bishop's responsibility, that should be right up there. You know, they should be having workshops. They should be having, meetings around these kinds of, because the church has been embroiled in stuff like this a lot over the last several years about, you know, rogue bishops and rogue church leaders going off and doing their thing, and then, of course, making the church look bad. So, you know, but at the end of the day, it's the church's responsibility if these individuals are working under their stewardship. If they're working under an official capacity as a leader, a lay leader, they need to be trained, you know, on how to deal with these sorts of very important issues that young women bring to the fore. Now, you know that those young players in 2012, 2004 or whatever, were alleged, college students at BYU who alleged that they had been raped by these kids, these young players. And when it came right down to it, they hadn't been raped. She'd made it up, right? And so these guys went through it, man, until, I don't know if you heard about the trial that went on down here in Provo, about this young woman who alleged rape, but anyway, like a long story short, she was playing off racial fears that are so deeply ingrained around, again, black sexuality. But praise God, at the end of the day, the truth came out. And what's funny about that is that the one kid, I can't remember his name, I think I write about him, I don't think he's in this particular book, but I can't remember the kid's name. He graduates. I think he leaves BYU, but he's exonerated. The other kid took a plea deal. Don't know what happened with him. But the follow-up story of that kid is he ended up in jail in Texas. He's on death row in Texas for murder, this young, who went here.
Really?
Yeah, I tried to reach out to him, talk to him.
I'm not familiar with that story.
I was going to go down to Texas and go see him in the prison. I wanted to see what circumstances, because all this started to all this went south for him when he left here. When he was kicked out of here, then his life just took a turn for the worse. So, and I met a couple of players like that, actually, who are alive, and when I talked to them about when I was interviewing these kids, and they're not kids now, these former players, you could still hear the pain in their voices over years ago. One in particular, Ronnie, was even more striking when I spoke to Ronnie about this. You could hear
Ronnie Jenkins?
Yeah, Ronnie Jenkins. You could hear the pain in his voice and how he felt he'd been deeply wronged by, you know, what had happened here, despite the fact that, you know, they gave him a couple of chances and stuff like that. He said, but the way it went down at the end was, he just felt, you know, you could just hear his pain, and not just him, but other players as well. So this stuff really matters to me. When I spoke to one of the Polynesian players about this, who actually plays in the NFL,
Harvey Unga.
I believe it was Harvey. Yeah, I spoke to Harvey's brother about his. And I also spoke to Harvey about it. The pain, man, and he's a member of the church. The pain that they carry around with this is deep. It's like a heavy weight on them. Even the non-Mormon players, you know, and some of them were very scared, afraid to talk to me. They were afraid. After all these years, they were like, "Dude, I don't want the church." They're afraid the church is going to come back and do something to them. I'm not kidding you. It's almost like a paranoia. I'm like, "Dude, this was 10 years ago. They ain't thinking about you, man." But they were concerned that history would come back and resurface again and make their life difficult the way it did then. So a lot of trauma around it. So again, I want to underscore, these are kids. These are 18-year-olds, man. What do they know? They just graduated from high school. We throw them into this system. We expect them to, and they're already unprepared. We expect them to comply. You know, you're here now. Do as Mormons do. It doesn't work like that. And we ought to know better than that.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Dr. Darren Smith. In our next episode, Dr. Smith will offer some suggestions for improvement as well as some praise for BYU.
BYU, if you're listening to me, please hear me on this one. You have the Marriott School of Business here, one of the best business schools in the country. Why not have a career day for these athletes, the ones that you know may not finish their degree? Maybe you get them taught, or may not go to the league. They need a job. Why not use your resources at the Marriott School to imbue these young men with a potential job?
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.